Hi, this is John DeLancey, and you are listening to the GeekCast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 211 of the Cinema Geeks. I'm one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me today, as he usually is, the Comic Concierge. How are we doing, Dan?
Good, how are you?
I am well. I just got beat by a four-year-old in bowling, so like it can't get any more like humbling than that, I guess. I'm using the bumpers next time.
Gets you unfair. Well, they get those ramps now, so it's a bit unfair.
Yes, you just have to angle the ramp and then adjust. It's almost like it's weird. It's like someone who's practicing like shooting or something. You just have to like adjust the sights a little bit. Maybe tap it a little bit to the left for the next shot. But she was doing this real interesting thing where like she would set the ball at the top of the ramp and then she would back up a step. And for someone who's never seen like Dragon Ball Z, she was summoning some type of power from somewhere with both hands and then would like do like a walk up and then hit the ball very softly. And then it would go down the ramp and do its thing. So the first time she hit, two or three pins, and you would have thought she would have just like won the World Series. She was ecstatic, so that was worth it. So today we are back at it, making another step through our Alfred Hitchcock retrospective. We just covered Rear Window last week, and we are now on number 7 of the films we've covered in his filmography. And today we're dealing with the 1958 American psychological thriller, which I feel like the descriptions for his films are not, like, there's no point. They're all very similar genre, right? Like, they're all some type of thriller or suspense. So this one is Vertigo, obviously one of his most famous films, based on a 1954 novel, as a lot of his films were based on novels or plays or things of that nature. The novel in English was called From Among the Dead. Screenplay by Alec Koppel and Samuel A. Taylor, and this one stars Jimmy Stewart, which we've seen before here a couple times, as a former San Francisco police detective who has retired after an incident in the line of duty which caused him to develop an extreme fear of heights accompanied by vertigo. He is hired as a private investigator to report on the strange behavior of an acquaintance's wife who is played by Kim Novak. As we talked about in episode 210, Dan, this is a rewatch for both of us. I believe there's only two of the films we're covering this entire time that are rewatches for both of us. That would be Rear Window and Vertigo. So why don't you reiterate or tell the listeners again what your experience was with Vertigo and kind of how that led into your impression this time on the rewatch.
Yeah, like you mentioned, I did see it before, but it was over 10 years ago. It was quite some time, over a decade, probably 13, 14 years ago. And when I mentioned last time, when I first watched it, you know, I didn't have, it didn't hit me. I didn't walk away like awed by it like so many people are, you know. It's tough. So it was weird going into it this time because on one hand, I have my past experience where I had mixed feelings towards it. On the other hand, you obviously have, you know, this is what, AFI's top movie of all time. It is loved by so many. So it's like I had competing expectations going into it. Rewatching it, I will say rewatching it a second time, I definitely enjoyed it more this time around than the first time. I didn't remember much of it, honestly. Like, I like watching it, it was almost like watching it the first time because there was very little that stuck with me for whatever reason. But you know, going through it, it was interesting, like going through this retrospective, because there's so many movies I try not to do it, but I keep comparing it to other films. Mm-hmm. But going into this and, you know, with those expectations, those mixed expectations, there were elements certainly that I appreciated with the movie. I think I can understand where so many, especially directors, love this film, because I think Hitchcock is doing a lot of interesting things here. We can get into that. But my apprehension, or the thing that I think stopped me from loving it or having that same type of admiration, that at the center of this movie, it's a love story, really. You know, a weird love story, but a love story nonetheless. And that love story, between James Stewart's character and Tim Novak, it is the driving force of the film, and I never connected with it. And the movie I kept going back to was Notorious, and I saw a lot of comparisons with those two films, because like Notorious, you have a character who has a job to do, and during that job he ends up falling in love with the person he's supposed to be, you know, protecting or whatever you want to say. And similar situations here, where I found the love story Notorious very captivating and felt like the chemistry was there. Like here, it just felt awkward. And I know maybe that's part of it, because it is an awkward situation and like the convoluted nature of what's really happening. But I never really, I don't know. I understood Jimmy Stewart's like admiration for her, but like that, I never felt that returned. And beyond, you know, appreciating it on a technical level, score is amazing. It's so strong. I was actually watching this in the living room, and my son came out and was like, "Can you turn that down? The music is making me so tense. I can't." It was bothering him so much, and he wasn't watching it. He just heard the music, and I think it was very effective score. But I don't know. I couldn't connect with it. To me, you know, I don't want to say this is the worst movie we've seen in this retrospective. I don't think there's a bad film yet, but I didn't walk away from this thinking this is a bad thing to put on anything, like one of the best movies I've ever seen. I can understand there's some impressive use of the camera, some interesting techniques that Alfred Hitchcock is using, but I was never wowed. I was never enthralled. And this is a thriller, but I don't think I was never thrilled by it, because I just couldn't get invested in its central romance, the central narrative that was driving it. And maybe you have to let that go, but I couldn't. So because of that, I walked away a bit mixed.
All right. So like you, I had seen this before, a little bit longer of a time stretch in between, because I want to say this is probably close to at least 20 years ago when I saw it the first time. As I talked about, this is one of the ones that I actually watched with my mom, which we didn't watch a ton of movies together, like in my teenage to adult years. Like we watched obviously a ton of films together growing up as a youngster, but we didn't do a lot of watching films together as we were both adults, I guess you could say. So we decided to go through and we watched, you know, quite a few old classic AFI films that reached its top 100. This, Rear Window, Citizen Kane, 2001 A Space Odyssey. We watched Philadelphia Story, you know, a couple like that. I'm missing a few. Chinatown, etc. And like you, I had very not negative reactions from the first time I saw it. It was more of a confused reaction, I guess, because when I watched it the first time, I didn't understand the love. I understood the like. I understood it being revered as a good film. That I would never take question with. But at the time, I didn't understand why it was ranked as high as it was on so many different lists. So I was underwhelmed, or I guess, or maybe the expectations were just too high for it to meet on the first watch. So I was very interested coming into this with having much lower expectations now, because I knew I hadn't really gone for it hook, line, and sinker the first time. So I kind of came into this, the bar was lower. So I thought having that, you know, it might be very similar to what I experienced with Rear Window in a way, where I actually really enjoyed that film the first time. But even so, watching it the second time within this retrospective, having the conversations with you, looking at it as we went through some of these other films, like it got elevated even more for me when we watched it last week. And so I was anticipating or curious if Vertigo would do the same thing for me on a second watch. And unfortunately, if we have any listeners left, we're probably going to make them mad, because it didn't work for me this time either. I agree that I would never call this a bad film, first off. So if I come across in any way negative during this record, I'm still not saying this is a bad film. Like you said, I don't think we've seen what I would call a bad film in this journey. Maybe it's rough because we just covered Rear Window last week, and I just go for that one so much that it was hard to come right after that one. But I respect the camera work. I respect the filming of this story and how all the technical aspects are done. The score is good. I think the acting performances are, for the most part, great. I think Jimmy Stewart in this is, I don't think there's many things you could say bad about his performance here. I definitely would prefer this performance over his performance in Rope. I don't think I would take this performance over his performance in Rear Window, but I think he's good. I think it's like, that's like a 1A, 1B conversation as far as like his performances go. I think that's great. I think Kim Novak is actually really fun to watch and interesting to watch, especially with what she's tasked to do in this film, which is like almost play three characters in a way. So like, I, not like literally, but like there's definitely like three different parts of her character. And I think it's very interesting how she takes that on, and that I think she's pretty successful with that. There was definitely some moments about the story that I had forgotten when, especially when it came to her character, that I had forgotten and were like new to me again on this rewatch. Most of the other bits and pieces I had remembered. There was just a couple things that came about that I was like, oh yeah, I forgot they did this, or something of that nature. What makes it not work for me overall, though, as far as like on, I say not work, I mean like not work as like something I would put as the best film of all time in that like framework. Number one is, and maybe it's because we've just covered a number of Hitchcock films, and most of them are thrillers or suspenses, as we mentioned. Like, I don't think we've watched one so far that is not considered with one of those two words. And what we really talked about, especially with 39 Steps, Notorious, like the first like 2, 3, 4 films that we covered, I think we mentioned it a number of times in those episodes. We may not have mentioned it as much in the more recent episodes, but that doesn't make it not true. But in those first films that we covered, I think we both really enjoyed how the pacing worked and how it seemed like there was not a dull moment. There was not a lull. Not saying that movies can't have those. Like, sometimes you need that to like digest. You need that to like ponder on what the movie's saying and things of that nature. But I felt like in this film, more than any of the other ones we've watched, there were some moments and times throughout the movie that we were going at a slower pace, and I don't 100% know if it was necessary, or that there were certain things that lulled me almost out of, it didn't take me out of the movie. I think that's too strong, but just like made me appreciate how much I liked the pacing and like the lack of wasted moments. Again, wasted is probably too strong of a word too, but I think you get what I'm saying a little bit. Like, I just felt like there was moving, it was moving at a brisker pace, or at least at a giving us scenes and moments that all felt like they were important. Like, when you go back through some of those earlier films, there's, and if you were tasked to like do like a recut or a re-edit it, like, I don't think there's many moments you take out of any of those films. Yeah. I'm not saying I can key in on moments that I would take out of this film, but I just got the feeling that there was something where that it was making it drag for me a little bit. Did you have that effect at all on you?
No, I can see where you're coming from, because there's a lot of silence in this movie, like even more so than like Rear Window. Because, you know, Jimmy Stewart, it's the camera's following him, he's following her, and it's a lot of him driving, and there's a lot of shots of him just driving, and all the focus is completely on him. And it's a lot of them just going around, him observing. And it's interesting watching this right after Rear Window, because there's so much observation within this compared to, along with Rear Window. I think the difference here, though, is there's not as much happening in that observation, because you're just looking at the person. And it's, in those scenes, like, it is, there's, it's a lot of like, you know, that's what we're going to drive over here. Go to the cemetery, go to the flower shop, and it becomes a bit repetitive. So I do think those scenes, in the sense of like, you know, editing today compared to back then, like it, or even some of the films that we've gotten through so far, he did allow those scenes to just kind of have just a steady flow to them, where we're going to watch this car go from point A to point B and that's it. It's going to be like a good drive up. And, So I I do think, and I've mentioned before, I do appreciate his patience as a director, because I don't think people talk about that a lot. And we've seen it with Rear Window, and we saw it here, but I guess what the difference
felt
is here,
I guess.
And there isn't as much, I think, in the sense of what's within that patience, like not much is happening. It's a lot of just watching this woman. And I think, you know, the point there is obviously you're trying to show that obsession. So like, he's slowly kind of being captivated by her.
Yeah.
But when, for me, when not buying that relationship, or like just feeling it almost more awkward than anything, it didn't lead to anything grandiose, or it felt like it. I don't know. I could understand, because, like you said, it definitely takes its time, but I don't feel like it ended up getting any place eventually that I was all that enthralled with compared to past films.
And I'm not saying I need something that's like going a mile a minute, or action upon action. It just felt like there was some moments where I didn't understand why we were, pausing as much. I mean, I know some of it's intentional. Well, I mean, all of it's probably intentional, but I get like some of it makes sense and some of it adds to some of the feel of the film. And it's not that it was slow. It was just like it felt slow. Like there's a difference between being slow and feeling slow to me. And I'm actually with you 100% on the relationship between Kim Novak and Jimmy Stewart's character. Like, I guess I had forgotten a little bit of how that comes about in the film, and I was watching this with my wife, and I literally leaned over to her as soon as I think they, I don't know if it was when they kissed for the first time or whatever the case may be, but I leaned over to her and was like, oh, well, I guess they've fallen in love really quickly and oddly. Like, it just seemed like it, I didn't buy the lead up to it. Like, it, yes, they were having, like, he was watching her and things of that nature, but there wasn't enough to me interactions between the two that developed that as enough for me to buy it. And then I didn't think the chemistry was there as much as I've seen with some of his other characters in their relationship. So I'm with you 100% on that. Didn't work for me either.
And it kind of, and I get, like, kind of it makes sense, because obviously she's playing a part. She wants him to fall in love with him. So that's part of it. It's like, that's kind of the whole plan. But then she's supposed to also actually fall in love with him. And, you know, within that. And I don't know if it's just maybe, like, if it's just looking through it too much with modern eyes, but it's also like, you know, she's in her early 20s here. He's 49, which also made me feel really old, because he's 49 talking about retiring. Right. I'm like, that's one, definitely live in a different economy than we do. But yeah.
It's interesting, though, because in Rear Window, there's a similar age difference, but it doesn't come across quite the same.
Yeah, I think too that relationship's written better, because we talked about, like, just, you know, it, one, they have better chemistry, and I don't know, like, I'm not gonna say that, you know, Jimmy Stewart had a bad performance, but even like going back and reading some of the reviews, because when this first came out, it actually was far more mixed. It was one of his more mixed films, and throughout time, like in the sense of like reaction from critics, and then as time went on, it became more lauded and things like that. So I think, you know, we're having a similar reaction. And looking at some of those, some people did say, like, you know, Jimmy Stewart in some places, he acted really big here in times. And I don't know if that always worked per se.
I can see that.
So
there's another thing too. Like, I know everybody always says it's the how it is, not the what it is, or whatever the Ebert quote, Siskel or Ebert quote is, that it's not necessarily, you shouldn't get stuck in the details of a film or some of the, you know, plot holes or different things like that. Like, you're just supposed to feel and like enjoy that. And I understand that to a point. However, I do have a problem when there's some things within the storytelling or plot mechanics to me that just, when they don't make sense, it in this case, it does take me out of the film a little bit. So, and I'm going to refer to a couple different things here, but the main one, which is the exact, and I even knew it was coming and I still had the exact same reaction. So they open this film up with his telling, or kind of a replaying of what is causing him to have this extreme fear of heights and vertigo, right? Like they lay the groundwork for that perfectly. I'm fine. I'm there 100%, right? Like, I feel the the tension. I feel where it's coming from. I buy why he's having this dilemma and this situation from a mental and physical aspect, right? Get all that. Then they have a sequence in his friend's apartment, I believe it is. I'm going to get the character's name wrong here. Midge, is that his friend?
Yes.
Marjorie Midge. Or Midge, right? So then there's a scene between her and Scotty here, and they're discussing this vertigo and the dizziness and whatnot, and then they're talking about taking these little steps, right? And he's stepping up on a step stool that has three steps, I believe. And he's talking about being able to do it little by little, and he steps on the one, and then he steps on the two, and then he gets on the third one, gets a little overconfident. Immediately the vertigo and the dizziness kicks in, and he's basically falling off of the step stool or having an episode, right? And I'm buying it now. Even, you know, I'm still with it. Like, I understand why it happened. I'm seeing it, them showing it, like, how much it's going to handicap him and how much it's going to restrict his abilities. And I'm there for all of that. And then they immediately, well, maybe not immediately, but like within a very short time, have sequences where he is going upstairs or looking over cliffs and doing all this other stuff. And there's no sign of him being scared or having vertigo or anything else. And it seems like it's very convenient for me when they play that note and when they don't. And I don't understand why they don't play it at every instance, not because it would become repetitive, but because like we've laid the groundwork that he can't even go up three steps on a stepladder. So there's moments when he's way higher than that and it's not affecting him. And that bothers me. It takes me out of a film in that respect, because now I'm anticipating it happening every time he puts himself in that situation. And when it doesn't, it doesn't make sense to me from a story standpoint. I know that's getting like really like bogged down in the details or like letting something that shouldn't bother me, but they do it almost immediately. And then they do it like two or three more times.
I didn't have an issue with that. Cause I took it as it wasn't the three steps of the step stool. It was, he got up to three steps and then it caused him to look down outside the window, and it was looking down outside the window, which cause the vertigo,
right? But there's another situation where he goes up another couple flight of stairs or something. I don't remember if it's the same sequence or like a little bit later, but he's on like a second, third, fourth floor of whatever, a building at some point. I can't remember if it's an apartment or if it's one of the other buildings, but he looks out of a window down towards the cars below and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So like it was times like that where I can get where he can like trick himself into like, oh, I need to go up these stairs because of something tense or something, like I feel like there's some like he does towards the end, like he's trying to go up the stairs because, not the end, I guess, the first time you think it's about to be the end, when he's going up the stairs at the wherever, the farmhouse or whatever you want to call that, like he has moments where the pressure or the suspense of the moment or the dire need of the moment will require him to do that, and he does it in a way like that he's triggered into doing it without remembering that he has the condition, and then he'll look down, and then they do show that at times where all of a sudden once he realizes what he's doing or where he's at or how high he is, it happens. But there's other times where he's going up that way and then even looks out windows down like a couple floors and there's no sign of his dizziness or vertigo, and for some reason that's a big hang up with me. I don't know why.
I honestly didn't notice it. Notice that at all.
The other thing that bothers me in this one is I feel like there's very convenient times where certain characters are either completely dropped from the story or picked up with, like, it seems like specifically Midge and Gavin. So Gavin is playing Kim Novak's husband, and Midge is playing John Ferguson or Jimmy Stewart's, I guess, former relationship / best friend, we could call her. And I didn't understand or 100% get on board with how much those guys, those two characters come and go, to the point where we have a scene or a sequence where Scotty has basically had a breakdown more so than he was already having. Like, mm-hmm. when he believes there's something tragic that's happened, and he's basically in a, I would call that a psych ward, or maybe not a psych ward, but a, you know, some type of medical building where he's trying to recover from his depression, or kind of like almost like a catatonic state. And at that point, they decide to bring Midge back into the story. She's been gone for a while, but they bring her back in the story. She's caring for him, like meeting with the doctors, trying to make sure he's okay, like doing all of this stuff, like going above and beyond to try to like help him recover from this. And then after that sequence, we never see her for the rest of the movie. And it seems to me a weird, like, I don't know if there was a sequence that got cut that was supposed to be in the film later, but it's weird to do that and have her like putting forth all that time. And then it's not like they don't have a, they don't have a blowing up. They don't have a, like a difference of a, they don't have a falling out. They don't have a, there's nothing after that. Like, we immediately switch to a sequence where he's recovered apparently from all that. And she just is gone from the movie.
Yeah. And I guess to me, I didn't. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I to me, I just took that because she asked the doctor how long it's going to take, 6 months to a year. I took it as maybe she just at that point is like she was there, dropped him off, but it wasn't necessarily her role to stay there the entire time. So I just took it as, you know,
I can see that. I kind of wish they would have done something then, like something to like show, like maybe on her way out, or like something that like signified that she was like wiping her hands of it or giving up on him or something, even though I don't 100% buy that her character would do that, because we really get the feeling that she's hook, line, and sinker in love with this guy in a way. Whether it's romantic love or just a caring friend love, like she definitely goes out of her way to like try to help him in multiple points in the movie.
Yeah. I guess to me, I just, I get it, but I also don't know if like that scene would really add anything to me. Like, I don't know if like it,
gotcha.
To me, it was just like, it was, let's get to what the movie is, what the focus is. And at that point, it's all about his obsession. And mm-hmm. I think the fact that he is not even like inclined to reach out to anyone else or have, you know, or have relationship with anyone else is, I think, more indicative of the fact that he's not, if anything, he's not fully recovered. So
yeah,
I get it. Like, I get like it is convenient, but I also think just the sense of, you know, sometimes like, does it really get you anything that you need for the story? And I don't know if it would per se, but at least for me.
Yeah, no, I get it. Another thing I wanted to get your opinion, like when he's going up the spiral stairs or whatever in that building to try to get to her before she gets to the top, which is going to ultimately lead to her quote unquote death. Sorry for the spoiler alerts for a 50 some year old movie, but did you at all get a chuckle or a laugh at how they filmed the body flying out of the window in that situation?
It was pretty funny. And first I'm like, wait, was it a dummy? And like, we knew it was like, I know there was a twist. I couldn't remember the twist. I'm like, oh, maybe it was that it's a dummy. But then I'm like, I saw people, there were people that were there. Yeah, I thought it was, I mean, obviously it's, you know, technology of the day, but yeah.
I'm not faulting the movie at all for it.
It was pretty funny. It was one of those things where it, like, almost like, you know, Austin Powers-esque or something like that.
Yeah.
In a way it,
I think it was the timing for me. It's the timing from like the point she would have taken her first step to the top level to the point where the body's already flying out of the window was like a half of a millisecond. And it was just like, it was very quick. So my wife and I were like dying for a second on that one. But
yeah,
again, not faulting the movie.
The Scream also, because The Scream, it was one of the, you know, it felt like, it wasn't the Wilhelm Scream, but it was, it felt like one of those like really classic, you know, so yeah.
So the second time they're in that room, we'll say the tower or whatever, mm-hmm. did you buy the fact, granted any nun in the dark is coming at you is probably scary, but did you buy 100% like that sequence of events when the nun appears and then we have our second tragedy in that tower?
I don't know. I'm conflicted on it. Because at first I'm like, did she think... I thought maybe in her mind she was seeing the ghost of the woman she killed. Was mm-hmm. that... She? I don't know. Like, I wasn't fully clear on, like, where that reaction came from. Because I didn't... At that point, it didn't seem like she was racked with guilt or anything right. regarding what happened.
Because, it definitely you know, had a... It was a yeah, it was a moment that I was confused at for, like, a couple seconds, like, wait, I missed something.
Yeah. I did think more could have been done to, because at that point, it doesn't, you know, perhaps you could say she's guilty because she's trying to make up for it regarding, like, getting his love back. But it felt like she was guilt. She felt guilt regarding what he did, what she did to him, but... Mm-hmm. The wife that they murdered, like that was that she seemed to like not even that even really pass her by at all. It wasn't really something that concerned her. So yeah, that I mean, I guess it's at this point, you know, I don't know if you can spoil a movie that's older than almost you know forever years old. But
right.
when that happened, when she made that jump, I was like, wait, did she think she was being? I don't know. It didn't work for me. That was part of it too.
It didn't work for me because number one, like you're saying, it has to be, there either has to be more guilt about what has happened or they have to, because for a long time, they're playing the fact that this character is being, controlled is not the right word, but like almost like hypnotized through this real life person that she's related to. And that it's like this out of body experience that she's being drawn to these different places and like really affected by this, like almost like a supernatural presence. Right. And, but you lose any part of that when you learn the first twist and the fact that she's literally just playing a role in all of that. And it's all fake. But I feel like if they would have like planted some seeds that like in the process of doing all that, that she was like somewhat affected maybe by that. Maybe I would have bought more into like even if they tried to play it up as if like somehow that connection was still haunting her or bothering her in a way, but they don't do that either because they've basically like completely cut that off of the film because it's all a ruse that they're, you know, artificially doing. So I'm like, if you don't mm-hmm. have the connection to that and you don't have a sense where she's just like riddled with guilt and if the scare is not like she wasn't in a precarious enough position for just a startled action to like cause her to do what happens. So like I couldn't buy it. I was trying to find a way to buy it. Like I literally was thinking about it for quite a few moments after the film, like which way do I need to interpret this for it to work for me? And I couldn't find one.
Yeah. I understand the poetic nature of it. And like, again, like how it ties into like, you know, thematic resonance of the film, but you know, the narrative piece, the logic of it, even like, you know, and if I was more with the movie at that point, if I was more engaged with it, I could probably buy into it more, but it just felt like another situation where things were happening that seemed to happen and mm-hmm. not in ways that felt organic enough for me in a way that made me feel like, okay, this makes sense regarding decisions people are making.
Yeah, like to me, like they almost have to. One way would have been to tie it back into, like, I guess the sequence where she jumps into the lake or something like that. But, like, at that point, we know what she was doing was, you know, intentional. So, yeah. It's like, it's hard to make that tie in work anymore. So, I don't know. Any other, like, parts or side characters or anything else that you, that caught your attention or you wanted to discuss that we haven't had a chance to yet?
Yeah, so I mean, I feel like I want to talk about some things I did enjoy. We mentioned the camera work, but didn't get into it a lot. But one thing I did like, even those scenes we talked about where not a lot was happening, I did find the cat, like how Hitchcock used his camera here. It was actually very similar to that of Rear Window, and like the way he would track individuals and track a scene, allow it to play out. I found that interesting. Mm-hmm. And also a random thing I thought was really great was actually Minch's office. I think it was her office. Mm-hmm. And how it would use, you mentioned like seeing a lot of heights, but like what I noticed was you often would see that like her window was wide open and you know, there was always that, her, like there is a lot of shots of the horizon in the distance. And I thought that worked well with the movie in general. Like, there's so many things, like, you could just not, that making screenshots of a movie makes it good, but I could see, which is why I understand why so many directors love this film, because, like, the cinematography, you know, how it's, you know, utilizing that, obviously, to tie into the idea of Vertigo, there's so many things you can point to, and mm-hmm. you know, it's gorgeously made, but within that, it's like getting, you know, a gorgeous package that is fantastic, but then you open it and, like, what's inside is a bit empty, and that's kind of what I felt like watching it. But I did appreciate that. I actually did like the character of Midge.
I did too.
Like, a good balance, and I honestly felt like her connection with Jimmy Stewart was much more than I felt it much more than elsewhere, and I got that more. But outside of that, there really weren't that many of the characters.
She did create one of the creepiest paintings though I've seen in film.
Yeah.
Then she's like so mad at herself for doing it, and I was like, "Well, you did that." It's like, I know. How did you think that was gonna go?
Yeah, like, I also too, like, the whole the Gavin character. We don't get much about him. Like, he wants to kill his wife, but I don't know.
I feel, you know, like, why, too, though.
Why,
like,
the why? Yeah,
I feel like in that situation, I somewhat appreciate it though, because I feel like even though we don't get a lot about his situation and his wife, I feel like by doing that, they make that twist so much more effective. Because it's just the first time you're watching it, you don't see that coming at all, because they've made no, like, they haven't telegraphed that at all.
Like, no.
Yes, he's like, wanting to know more about her, but it's always coming across as if he's still caring about her. And he likes his wife. He just doesn't like this weird person she keeps flipping into. So, like, I do appreciate the fact that, like, they don't really give you any breadcrumbs for that, because I think so many films like to do that, and it usually becomes too obvious. But you're right. Like, we don't get a lot with his character. And he definitely does, like Midge, come in and then disappear and then, like, randomly come back in. And, like, there's a lot of, like, bringing in those two characters in and out.
The plot that come up with this is... The plot they come up with is pretty impressive. Like, all the machinations they come up with in order to... He's like, you know, he's like a supervillain with everything he does.
Definitely commitment.
I don't know.
Like, a big-time commitment on both people to pull this off.
And what's interesting, too, when, like, Kim Novak shows back up, at first I'm like, that's not the same person. Like, I'm like, they don't look anything alike. And I'm like, oh, they didn't... And, like, because I didn't remember what happened... And I'm watching it. I'm like, you think they would at least get someone that actually looked like Kim Novak for this part? And then not. And I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. That is her. Like, I didn't. But I think it was eyebrows just threw me off.
Yes. Looked, apparently, in the 50s, they were way better at changing someone's hair color 100%, like, very quickly than I feel like they are even today. Because usually it's like a whole long process you have to go through, and it's like stages. They're just like, nope, immediately back to blonde.
Probably the chemicals were a lot worse for you, so more effective.
Right. I do, though. That's why I give her character some credit, even though I don't feel like she had the same chemistry with Jimmy Stewart as, like we said, with some other characters in some other films. The fact that she's playing the wife, and then she's also playing the wife that is crazy, and then she's also playing this other character that's pretending not to be the wife. Like, it was an interesting, like... whatever a dichotomy is with three. Is that a trichotomy? I don't know. I'm making up words here, but, like, it's like an interesting thing that she's tasked with, and I think she does do a good job of that, because, like you, I was completely questioning whether that was actually her or not.
Yeah, I think I don't have an issue with her performance alone. It's just them and together.
Yeah, no, I agree. You
know? And like I said, I know that's kind of part of it, because it gets where she's supposed to be playing a part, and then at the end, it's meant to be awkward. But I was like, what am I investing in here? And like you said, it's not what it's about, it's how it's about. But the how it's about didn't necessarily draw me as much. And so, again, like we mentioned, I'm looking at this picture in the sense of trying to understand it in the grand scheme of what we're looking at Hitchcock-wise. And, you know, isolated, obviously, it's a well-made film. That's no question about it. But I don't have the admiration or it didn't have the impact on me personally as even some of the most of the movies we've gone through so far.
Right. How did you like the last thing, and then I'll kind of get to some of my final thoughts, but how did you like the, I don't know what you would call it, the like the sequence where it was like the animation slash,
oh yeah,
like that came out of nowhere, but I kind of liked what they did with it.
I like the ambition of it. I do think there's a lot of ambition in this, and that I appreciated. I don't know if it, like, I don't know, like, the it became a bit psychedelic in a second.
Yes, I guess the word I was looking for.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, man, and it wasn't quite the 60s yet, so I don't know if that helped, helped lead into, you know, what came first,
yeah.
That, or, like, you saw, or what came next, but... yeah, I did like the approach of it. Like and I think it came at the right time, and it did give it a little bit of a different flavor as it entered into that third act.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't expecting it, and I was like, oh, Alfred Hitchcock's like doing something new here. Like, I haven't seen anything quite like this. Like, I guess we got the flash camera sequence in Rear Window, but this is a whole different thing. Was there any other like trivia bits that you didn't get the chance to share, or any final thoughts that you want to give for Vertigo here?
The only other trivia bit, because I didn't know this beforehand, but apparently Jimmy Stewart wears a toupee. I had no idea, and I was amazed by that, because like in this he's like grayish hair, but I guess he made that he started going bald during World War II, and he was wearing it the entire time. Because I was always impressed with his hair, because it's so like perfectly, you know, it's just like it is it's perfect. It doesn't move, but that's because he has a toupee, which I just thought was rather, I don't know. It was interesting seeing that, because I never would have guessed that. So,
I don't know.
I wouldn't have had no impact on the quality of the movie or anything like that. It was just, I watched it through Prime, and sometimes it shows up in that, like, trivia thing.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. Not, I don't, like, I tried not for that to pop up, but sometimes it does. It came up, and I'm like, oh, that's weird.
So. Interesting. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to watch any, like, special features on this one, unfortunately. But it did, just because we've mentioned it in a few other ones, just like Rear Window, it does have a perfect score on Metacritic. It does actually have a lower score on Rotten Tomatoes than Rear Window. I think Rear Window is at 98%, and this one's at a 93%. But this one typically gets ranked higher on a lot of those AFI / you know, other publications that put out like the best of or the best films of all time. And I feel like Vertigo always seems to score better than Rear Window for some reason on that. My thoughts, I was looking back through some of the comments, especially like the contemporary critics and things like that, and one of them kind of summed it up for me. This was one of the reviews that got posted in the New York Post originally, and it said, "Let's admit it right now. Hitchcock's surfaces are so smooth, he thinks he can get away with murder in the logic and realism departments. If you want to tear your Vertigo apart, it rips easily. On the other hand, there's no denying that James Stewart's unactorish acting carries a heavy air of reality into the picture, and Kim Novak's somnambulistic behavior called for by the script is something she can do to perfection. It's doubtful that Vertigo can take equal rank with the best of the Hitchcock studies. It has too many holes." And then it goes on to say some other stuff. So obviously he's wrong, because it does get ranked as one of the best Hitchcock films. But yeah. I do agree with him that, like, if you want to tear Vertigo apart, I do think it rips easily. I do think there's some holes in there. But it's Hitchcock, so there's a lot of other good stuff that kind of negate this. I don't think this is a bad film in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a good film. I think it's worth watching. I think if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. Probably not after this review, because we've spoiled everything for you. But outside of that, go ahead. I just don't think I can put it, like, it's not going to rank in one. Spoiler alert for when we do our awards, it's not going to be in my top three.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a movie that any movie fan should see, definitely. But again, it's not, I don't have the admiration for it. Like, it's not like I'm, like, Rear Window, I feel like after it, like, I could watch that again.
Yes.
This one, I didn't necessarily feel that way. It's just like, I'll probably be good for another 10 years or so. So, you know.
Yeah, it's not one of those that I would watch and say, like, I'm never going to watch this film again. Like, there are some times where I rewatch a film, and I think the second watch is important. I don't know. I was thinking about this the other week, and I don't know if I shared it with you or not, but I feel like the second watch is like where you determine if something's going to be like in a regular rotation with you, or if it's going to be the last time you watch it. Like,
yeah,
I'll watch anything the first time, and then the second time is, I think, where I don't watch a lot of movies the second time, but if you watch it the second time, I think that's where I usually make a decision where I'm good on that one, or like, hey, I should watch this every couple of years, or I need to show this to somebody next time I hear somebody hasn't seen it, or something like that. So, yeah, maybe another decade or so, I'll give it another shot. But that does it for this review of Vertigo. We have three left to cover. And that would be 59 is North by Northwest. And then we have Psycho from 1960 and The Birds from 1963. Dan, North by Northwest, what's your experience? What are you walking into it with as far as baggage goes?
This is what I have seen. It's still been a while. I think I the first time I watched it was when it first came on Blu-ray, and I bought the Blu-ray. And I really liked it. Another one I really enjoyed. I remember thinking it was more of a, like, where Vertigo or Suspension, jeez, I can't even say words, but it definitely felt more like the summer blockbuster Alfred Hitchcock, because there's a lot of big set pieces. And so it felt almost like more bombastic, but it was a lot of fun. So I'm interested in going back, like you said, that second watch to see, like, does it hold up? And, you know, it was one of the first Hitchcock films I saw. So looking back at what we've done so far, would it, you know, where will it rank, or like, how does it hold up? That I don't know. So I'm really excited to go watch it again.
And this will be a first watch for me, as will the remaining films. So I'm interested to see all of them. This is also kind of interesting because starting with Vertigo, we are actually watching these. Like, these four films were released in order. Like, there's no other films that he's releasing in between any of those. It goes Vertigo, North by Northwest, Psycho, and The Birds. Like, that's his filmography, one right after the other. So it's going to be kind of interesting to watch those in that respect as well. So if you have any thoughts or feedback, or want to let us know why we are so wrong about our take on Vertigo, which I'm sure there will be plenty of people that think that, there's a couple different ways that you can get into contact with us. You can search out Dan and all of his other content by searching The Comic Concierge on most social platforms. Just put that in there and I'm sure you'll find him. He does a lot of great comic content on a regular basis. And what number are you now on your, are you at 500 already?
Oh, for I'm for at Twitter, I track, and well, all the social media is what I'm reading. I am at, like, for the year, 684 comics.
I was gonna say, you made that goal of 500, and I could tell after the first month that was gonna be annihilated.
Yeah, there's so. there's a trend or hashtag on social media, my 500 comic goal. I don't know where it started from, but I was doing that this year. So
what is your actual goal now? Are you trying to hit like 2000?
I don't know. I don't really have one. I like it. Yeah, I'm just reading. I'm crazy because I do that, and I actually have an Excel spreadsheet where I track all the comics I read by genre. Mm-hmm. And so it's, but then I can get a pivot table and check to see like what are my most.
I love it.
Read. I don't know. I'm weird like that, but it's.
I like it. I appreciate all of that.
It's like a dopamine hit. I don't know why. It's like, you know, after a long day of work, listen to podcasts while tracking my comics is a good way to, like, you know, settle down for the night.
I'm here for it. If you want to search out any of my content, you can search out either the Geek Showcase on YouTube and see some of the content there. Hopefully there will be some more content added soon. And you can also search me out on the social media, for at least for Twitter, Facebook, and I think I have an Instagram. That's at Optimus Solo. You can leave us comments as far as the show handle, which is the Cinema Geeks, or you can check out all the other GeekCast Radio Network stuff by going to their website or searching them on their social medias as well. So that does it for Vertigo. Join us next time for more Alfred Hitchcock content with the Cinema Geeks.
Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.